Stands to order. Representative Halverson, would you move the minutes of February 19th?
Madam Chair, I move the minutes of the February 19th be adopted, accepted.
The minutes have been moved. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposition? Minutes are adopted. We are going to switch orders this morning. We have two bills on the agenda, members. Both are going to be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. I'm going to switch orders this morning and hear from the second bill that we had on our agenda, which is Representative Long's bill. And Representative Long, would you like to move that House File 1360 be laid over for possible inclusion?
I so move.
Thank you. Welcome. I understand you have two authors' amendments. Would you like to move each of those amendments?
I do, Madam Chair. They're both, I think, technical in nature, trying to get to the goal of the act. So the first is the A-1954 amendment. And this was a request from the Bankers Association to have some clarity around the treatment of the improvements. And I think it's technical in nature and would like to move that now.
Amendment 0054 has been moved. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposition? The amendment is adopted. Do you have another amendment?
I do, Madam Chair. This was the A-1955 amendment. This was an amendment that was suggested by revisor staff as a better way of getting to the same goal of the bill. And so it's simply moving the language from one section to another into the definition section.
Okay. Representative Long moves Amendment 0055. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposition? The amendment is adopted. The bill is in the order that you would like. Would you tell us about your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So we know that energy efficiency pays back and often does so very quickly, as do many renewable energy projects. The challenge is often the financing and making sure that there is the ability to be able to support projects on the upfront side when folks are trying to move forward. The Property Assessed Clean Energy Program, or PACE, is a well-established program that's been around for a number of years. It allows a property owner to finance the upfront cost of energy improvements on a property and then pay back the cost over time through a voluntary special assessment. There are 63 of Minnesota's 87 counties that allow for PACE funding. The property owners don't have to put down large upfront cash payments, and the arrangements often provide a positive cash flow to the property owners based on the savings that they're achieving. There's no cost to taxpayers, so this is really a win-win. The bill that we're talking about today is in the commercial PACE sector only. There's also residential PACE, which has some additional considerations, but we're only talking about the commercial sector today. There have been over 160 Minnesota projects that have been financed through PACE, from the Greenway office building in Minneapolis to Tim's Trucking in Morristown to the Air Corps Aviation in Bemidji, so all over the state. And this bill really is just making a simple fix. Right now, for new construction, there are barriers to using PACE because you can only use the assessed value of the property. And this bill would also allow lenders to look at the appraised value, which must be accepted and approved by the mortgage lender. So it would open up opportunities for PACE to be used in new construction projects. Since I introduced it, I've also added Representative Pat Garofalo as a co-author. So if he was here, I'd thank him in person. And with that, I'll bring up my four testifiers. Maybe we'll just go two at a time since we've got limited space. So Peter Klein is here with the St. Paul Port Authority, and then I'll invite up John Cameron with Cameron Law Office. Okay.
Welcome to the committee, if you put your name on the record.
My name is Peter Klein. I'm Vice President of Finance for the St. Paul Port Authority. Thank you very much for allowing me to speak. It's not often that I get to come up here, so appreciate it very much. So the St. Paul Port Authority has operated PACE for several years. We also have three energy financing programs. First of all, we have our Trillion BTU Revolving Loan Fund, which was funded through the legislature with ARRA money. And then we have PACE, which the Department of Commerce asked us to try to have take off here in Minnesota. And then Energy Savings Partnership is for publicly owned buildings and annual appropriation lease. All of our programs are statewide. All of them are 100% financing, so no money up front for the property owner. And all of them strive to have positive cash flow immediately to the property owner. In Minnesota, there are two PACE programs, two operating PACE programs. Our MIN PACE program and then the Southwest Regional Development Commission has 18 counties in the southwest portion of the state. In Minnesota, we have anything but residential properties with less than five units. Residential properties with less than five units, we do not operate any PACE program for that. But larger scale residential properties and anything else, including nonprofits who usually don't pay property taxes, but they do pay special assessments. We've had quite a few nonprofits that have taken advantage of the program. And we've actually funded several places of worship as well. The three niches that we see for PACE are renewable energy projects, multi-tenant buildings, and we believe that senior care facilities can benefit greatly from the use of PACE as well. Right now we've accomplished closing in on 200 projects, over $63 million, and it doesn't seem like a significant amount, but that ranks up Minnesota third in the nation behind California and Connecticut's Green Bank. So we are a very successful PACE state. And in that, we've saved significant amount of BTUs annually, as well as creating construction jobs, and a few of the projects have actually created and retained jobs at the place of business. This is a map showing where we have joint powers agreements, the green and the blue. We do have joint powers agreements. The blue also have joint powers agreements with the Southwest Regional Development Commission. But you can see from Ely to Bemidji and to southeast and west, we've accomplished quite a few projects throughout the state. Currently, we have been contacted by more than a dozen projects that are new construction that would like to move forward with PACE as part of the financing. $330 million of projects and about $30 million of PACE would be part of the financing of these projects. And that's typically what we see as PACE comes in right around 10% of the overall construction costs of a project. There's housing projects, a few hotels, a couple of nonprofits, and at least one mixed-use project. Examples of those are there's a net zero student housing complex that is being proposed at Lake Superior State in Duluth. And that would be a fabulous project, absolutely needing PACE to come in to be part of the financing. There's a Mayo Clinic hotel in Rochester that PACE is being requested to be part of the financing. So the projects that we have, certainly more than a dozen, are all over the state and could utilize PACE. With PACE, the mortgage holder is in control. They have basically financed, maximized the amount of financing that they will are willing to put into a project. And so there's usually a financing gap in order to make the facility more energy efficient. And that's where PACE comes in. It finances portions of the building that make it more energy efficient. And by statute, it has to have less than a 20-year payback for any of the projects that we finance. But again, the mortgage holder is in control. If they want PACE to be part of the financing and to fill a gap, we would be able to do that. If they don't want to have PACE as part of the financing, then PACE will not be a portion of the financing. So the mortgage holder is in complete control in all of our projects. Even in the renovation projects, we always have the mortgage holder acknowledgement. So anybody that has a mortgage on the property has to sign off and say that they understand and want to have PACE as part of the financing. I think that it will have a significant impact on job creation, on energy reduction, and making our businesses more competitive and positive cash flow. So we do not see any negatives towards this proposal.
Thank you. Any questions for the testifier? You have your next testifier.
Yes, we have John Cameron, who's president at Cameron Law Office.
Good morning, and thank you for letting me appear today. My name is John Cameron. I have a law practice called Cameron Law Office. We became aware of the PACE program over the last few years in working with the Port Authority and Mr. Klein and his office. The facts that we're aware of in our office is that just last year we had a project that was new construction, senior housing that could have benefited from this a PACE facility. Our client went down the road quite a ways to pursue it, only to find out that the statute had a mechanism within it which would not allow the new construction to benefit from that. So as a result, that project was ultimately is under construction today without the benefit of the PACE and also the benefits to the energy efficiency as well. Currently, we have another project in outstate Minnesota with a couple components to it. One is senior housing on an affordable basis and some multifamily housing, both of which are intended to be built this year. It would be ideal to have a PACE component in those projects, but as the statute currently is written, that would be unavailable for those projects. And one of the components is senior housing on an affordable basis, and it really is a challenge to get those projects constructed with the current cost of construction, with the financing. And I happen to be one of the owners in that project. We previously developed 90 units of senior housing with 18 units of affordable. We have a list for the market rate, the balance of the units, but we have a really long list for the affordable component. So anything that can be done to kind of help bolster those projects, which there's a large need for that, and I think this mechanism would hopefully work well with that as well. So those are my experiences currently with PACE and the challenges, and I think there would be an excellent amendment to the bill to allow these projects to at least consider adding a PACE component.
Thank you. I don't see questions, so if you'd bring up your next witnesses.
Okay, available. Is there questions?
So next, Madam Chair, we're going to hear from Benjamin Stafford, who is Director of Policy and Public Affairs with Clean Energy Economy Minnesota.
Morning, Madam Chair, representatives. Thank you for hearing this bill today, and we'll give you a little bit of perspective from the business side. Myself and Michael, who's with one of the member companies of Clean Energy Economy Minnesota, All Energy Solar, will go through how this impacts the business community. So a little bit about Clean Energy Economy Minnesota. I know that many of you are familiar with us as a group, but just to sort of frame where we come to these business and energy issues. We're a non-for-profit organization-led organization that looks at the issues facing the clean energy ecosystem, the business ecosystem in clean energy. We work through educational leadership, through policy analysis, like what we're doing here today, to help promote clean energy across the state and grow the sector. When we sort of come to these meetings, we often refer to ourselves as the business voice of clean energy. And let me give you a picture of what that means, because if we're an organization, we don't give you a logo slide. What are we doing? Here's ours. And what I want to point out related to the bill at hand and to PACE is that we have organizations that speak to us, and they call me. They call Benjamin quite a bit on both sides of the demand and supply side for clean energy. So on the demand side, you have a number of organizations in the state that have clean energy goals, targets, and want clean energy options for their businesses. On the supply side, we're a pan-technology organization that includes energy efficiency, wind, biomass, and our colleagues in solar as well. And all of these sort of qualify under that PACE envelope. And so we hear a lot about the business issues in financing in this sector. So to the bill at hand, what opportunities do these minor changes sort of bring to the table for the business community? One, I think this responds to an increasing trend we've seen in business demand for clean energy. In a former career, I used to represent a lot of buyers on the business side for corporate clean energy, and it's 74 and actually maybe now 76 of the Fortune 100 companies have some sort of clean energy goal, target, et cetera. States that have strong policies that show that they understand the financing and issues around clean energy for those businesses, they do attract those businesses. In fact, most of the ones I talk to, access to clean energy options via financing or some other mechanism is usually their number two reason for expanding or locating new facilities in any state. And like 5 years ago, I'd say that to committees like this, and they go, yeah, it's really number two now, and it's right behind workforce. So we see this as being responsive to that. Number two, we've got pretty broad support here, I think, with the speakers today. This is recognizing program success and then growing the program where it makes sense to grow it. So we have, you know, we have bipartisan support on the authorship. We have broad support, I think, from the PACE community looking at this. And this recognizes and adjusts some of the market issues that we've seen come to bear, including the new construction, sort of unintended market barrier there, that we're missing some projects that could really add value to the state and to the businesses. And then last, it's leveraging those common practices for assessing property value, which just makes sense. These are already in practice in other sectors of the economy. This sort of expands that statute. So if I'm going to reflect on these amendments, I'm going to put my business school hat on, and I'm a recovering business professor, so you'll have to bear with me. Plan, do, check, act. You plan a PACE program, you do it, you see how it works, you check where there's options and places to improve it, then you act to improve them. This is, you know, pretty incremental stuff. It works well. We've identified barriers, and it's just bolstering the success of an already successful program, if that makes sense. And I'd be remiss if I didn't give you a job slide, because that's what I'm supposed to do. We have 59,000 plus clean jobs, energy jobs in the state. That is growing twice the clip of the rest of the sectors of the economy. 40% of those jobs are in outstate. This is not a seven county story. This is a statewide story. And we, you know, support that. And you saw the dots in Pete's graph of where these PACE projects are getting put out. We just think this is increasing, you know, that kind of impact. I would also point out that a disproportionate amount of this growth is in small business sector. So when you hear about jobs numbers, you often hear that it's coming from small business. From the Clean Energy Jobs Midwest, you know, surveys that we do, about 72-73% of the businesses in the clean energy sector employ 20 or fewer folks. This is good small business growth. So it's meeting the needs of the sector. It's responding to needs of commercial folks. It's growing a successful program, and it's hitting small business. We just think that across the board, this is a win-win-win. But you don't have to take my word for it. Let's have Michael talk about his experience as a developer.
Madam Chair, representatives, thanks for having me today. Good morning. My name is Michael Tallheimer. I'm the Director of Business Development, and I lead our commercial solar project work at All Energy Solar here in St. Paul. We have facilitated the design and installation of solar projects on commercial, residential, government, and agricultural customers on their facilities for upwards of 10 years now. In 2009, we were a company of three individuals. We completed five projects. We are now upwards of 130 employees in-house, and last year that number reached 700. So we have seen a tremendous amount of success being a part of the clean energy economy in Minnesota, but we also recognize that there are areas for improvement where we can certainly have a greater impact. I don't want to be misunderstood. Business is very good for the solar industry in general and the health of our business here in Minnesota, but there are definitely certain underserved markets that we think deserve additional focus, and a lot of that ties to the way these projects end up marching through the development cycle and becoming applicable for financing on the tail end of these projects. We feel that solar investment is slightly polarized in that we have a lot of investment in the small market, the residential scale market, as well as the large utility scale market. But this, as I referred to earlier, underserved market in solar is really the small to medium scale commercial market. And that is the market segment of most Minnesota businesses. So we feel that by utilizing programs that provide advantageous financing options to companies of that size and scale only furthers the opportunity for us to have a greater reach in promoting clean energy here in Minnesota. Our program, our focus on the PACE program since originally rolled out here in Minnesota has been strong, and it's been a positive experience for us. We've seen commercial projects of all sizes utilize this program to secure financing for commercial solar systems. And as we work with business owners around the state, we have found that the rates and the terms and the conditions, as well as the management of the program through Mr. Klein and his team at the Port Authority, have been really successful and have proven to be an attractive option for customers that are entertaining working on projects with us. As it's been reviewed today, the hope is that we can continue to expand the effectiveness of this program. And that kind of falls into these two buckets: to adjust or revise the method of establishing a valid property assessment and valuation, but also to permit new builds to participate in this program. Incorporating solar into new construction is certainly one of the most cost-effective ways to do so. And so we feel that if we can afford property owners and developers the opportunity to entertain PACE, that that will only lead to further project work in this area and in Minnesota. Any attractive financing options that cater to this underserved market that I reference only offers further opportunity for advancement within our state's businesses. So we think the potential with commercial solar here in Minnesota is only starting its growth trajectory. Companies have been a bit slower to adopt solar and integrate them into their operation as opposed to residential or potentially community solar clients, and much of that does have to do with sourcing attractive financing options for those projects. So we feel that with further revisions and improvements to effective and proven programs like the PACE program that we have here in the state, that the upside to the commercial solar market here is substantial. So we certainly encourage the committee's support on the bill, and thank you for your time.
I don't see any questions. Oh, one, Representative Bierman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the testifying. Thank you for bringing the bill forward. Question I had was, what is the dividing line between commercial and residential for all energy as far as, is it a metric on size of the system or the size of the building? How does that divide out?
It's as simple as, is this for a residence or is this for a business? Okay. So if we were putting a small system on Bob's Coffee Shop in St. Paul with 10 panels, that's a commercial project for us. If we were putting 1,000 panels on the top of a large warehouse in Woodbury, that's a commercial project as well. But if the system's going on someone's home, that fits into our residential segment.
Okay, and then just to follow up on that is, so in the number of employees you mentioned, you have 30 currently?
Oh, just over 130.
130, and how about the residential side?
Well, our team is inclusive of
one team.
One group, yep. So we have, I have a commercial team that's a small group of the entire team that supports our commercial project load. I mentioned that we've done a lot of projects, especially the last several years. We've seen incredible uptick in the amount of projects we've been able to design and install. The bulk of the numbers are in the residential market just based on the opportunity there and the scale. But on the commercial side, we're seeing larger, more impactful projects. They just still happen to fit within this area of investment that makes it sometimes challenging to find attractive financing.
Okay, and then finally, last question is, so in the, can you comment a little bit on how much work you're doing in the agricultural sector?
Sure, I don't know if I could provide an exact number, but we support systems for farmers, both, you know, farm residences as well as in support of commercial farms all over the Midwest, including here in Minnesota. So I would say comfortably dozens of agricultural systems are within our pipeline every year. And, you know, that rounds out a portion of that, you know, roughly 700 that we've done in the last year.
Okay, and I think that there's a huge source for this, so I'm pleased you brought the bill forward. Thanks.
Thanks, Representative Bierman. I might have Peter, too, if he wants to comment on agriculture products.
Most of the dots on the map in the presentation in the outstate relate to farms, and usually it's a farm that has some animal operation to it. And so we've accomplished well over 100 projects, I would say, in agricultural settings all over the state of Minnesota. It is an absolute fabulous niche for PACE.
So one more follow-up then. So the agriculture projects are mostly smaller farms, or are they more like larger livestock, or would you say they're more agriculturally driven?
Madam Chair and Representative, what we're seeing is larger farms that have some animal operation to them. But there's also the smaller farm, there's the vineyard, there's the sheep ranch. So it is widespread, but generally what we see is around a 40 kW system being installed, and if it's just a farmhouse, it's not going to be able to utilize all of that energy. But if there's an animal component to the farm, solar is an absolutely great solution for that business, and PACE is probably the best form of financing for them, because the first payment is going to be May 15th of the following year with the property tax statement. That allows the farm to file the taxes, get the investment tax credit and depreciation before they need to make a first payment. It really allows for immediate positive cash flow on that investment.
Last question, I promise. So my question is, are most of those farms, say, where they're maybe raising turkeys or something, are they looking for this to accommodate their entire energy needs, or are they looking for a portion, generally speaking?
Generally, what we see is that it's a portion. It's not the entire amount, but they're usually putting in 40 kW systems. And if that's enough to fund the entire amount, they will, but generally I would say it's not the entire energy consumption of the site, but it is a significant portion of it.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Representative Acomb.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question for the gentleman from the St. Paul Port Authority. I come from city government, and in my district there's a lot of new construction going on, so I appreciate this bill and expanding to new construction, especially in the residential side of things. And so my question is, do you have contact then with city community development directors in order to pass along these new changes if and when they happen, to make sure they're aware as projects are coming forward to them?
Madam Chair, Representative, we do work directly with most of the economic development groups throughout the state. So our first inroad is a project comes to us, and then we approach the county or the city, generally the county, and approach their economic development group and explain the benefits to them of what PACE can bring. And generally, that's one of the three main sources of projects that we get referrals from is the Economic Development Group of the local community. That when they are talking with their businesses, that when energy comes up, a light comes on and they think, okay, well, contact the PACE program and it might be a good solution for you.
Thank you. I don't see any further questions. Well, I do.
Madam Chair, I have a question about the verbiage of the bill. And so I don't know if this is the time to do it while we have everyone up there or if it's more a question for the author.
You can give a question for the author. He may refer to some
Thank
of his testifiers.
Madam Chair. I'm looking at section 1.19 and 1.20. And my question is, the way it's written now with the extra language added in, it says that the greater of either one, 20% of the appraised value of the property, you know, with the mortgage lender, or the assessed value of the real property on which the improvements are installed. So that tells me either 20% of the appraised value or 100% of the assessed value. And so I wonder if both of those are meant to be 20% or...
Madam Chair, Representative Bowe, thank you for the question. This is something we caught last night. We couldn't figure out how to do an oral amendment to it today, but we're hoping that we can address it as it's laid over before possible inclusion in an omnibus.
Thank you. And, Madam Chair, if I may, I am not sure what is meant by a portion of 2.1, top sentence on the second page, where it says, or providing an energy savings benefit. And trying to figure out what that means and how it ties into the rest of the sentence. Can you give me clarification on that?
Sure. So, Madam Chair, Representative, as I understand, this is staying consistent with the rest of the statute. So this is making sure it stays with the definitions. So there's some wording, and I'd be happy to talk to you offline to walk through that, and we're working with the revisions to make sure that's tight.
I would appreciate that. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any public comment? I don't see any public comment. Representative Long renews his motion that House File 1360 be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposition? So moved. Representative Kaplan.
Maybe I'm doing this. She knows our experience. That's a point well taken.
Welcome to the committee. I am going to move House File 1165 be laid over for possible inclusion. I understand that you have an author's amendment, and I will move the DE2 amendment to get the bill in the shape that you would like it. All of those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposition? The amendment is adopted. Representative Kaplan, tell us about your bill.
Thank you very much, Chair and members. Thank you for your flexibility, as I am still a freshman who forgets where room 120 is. And being a freshman, I've also brought treats for the committee members and staff. They are coconut toffee cookies or molasses ginger. Please enjoy them. I am bringing House File 1165 today, which is a bill for energy storage. This is a plan to create essentially large batteries. And you all have heard much more about energy storage being on the Energy Committee. And I'm sure you will have technical questions, which is why I've brought some technical folks with me today. I believe that this bill is a really good idea for Minnesota, and the amendment even goes beyond what we had proposed initially, because we know this is a good idea for Minnesota. This will do things like help reduce ratepayer costs, reducing some of the need for peak capacity. Will reduce costs to the ratepayers. It'll make our grid more resilient, both for unplanned weather outages and as a backup power. And then it'll help us even out fluctuations between generation and demand. It'll be good for our renewable energy economy in Minnesota. And this bill does other things as well that'll be good for Minnesota. Having a study will help us deploy this technology really thoughtfully through Minnesota. And when we reform the utility planning process to include this storage technology, it puts storage on an equal footing with other generation technologies. And having a pilot project to do this will help stakeholders and agencies iron out some of the challenges that come with introducing a new generation source to our grid. So I would like to introduce my first testifier, Mr. Schaefer from MNSEA.
I'm David Schaefer with the Minnesota Solar Energy Industry Association. I'm actually going to give it to Peter to kick it off with Clean Grid Alliance.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name's Peter Mavis. I'm the Western Regional Policy Manager with Clean Grid Alliance. We have a 9-state footprint. I work in the upper Midwestern 5 states of Minnesota, the Dakotas, Iowa, and Minnesota. We work on, which some of you already know, we work on utility scale wind and solar. We also have traditionally worked on transmission, and now we are getting in the realm of energy storage. And I could say that of the 5 states that I work in, Minnesota is the only one that's really taken a hard look at storage and how it could be deployed on our system. So that's very exciting. 1165, we appreciate the representative for bringing this bill forward. I just want to make a few comments about the bill. You know, we've been working with a coalition of folks that includes Mr. Schaefer with MNSEA, Clean Energy Economy Minnesota, the Energy Storage Association, as well as the utilities. And we've been working on language for a good part of a year and some change, and feel very comfortable with the inroads that we have made. And so just a couple of comments on a few things that I think is really important as we move energy storage forward. One is probably the most important piece is that energy storage is considered in the resource planning process that the utilities go through. This will provide a basis of so the regulators can look at this stuff and figure out what truly is in the public interest going forward. I know utilities like Xcel Energy, they've been working on this with their resource planning currently. I've been in some meetings where they've talked about this. The other piece that I think is very important is the idea of establishing a pilot project, allowing utilities to bring projects forward and be in a situation where they can get cost recovery, puts the decisions in the hands of the commission to determine if it's in the public interest. So I think that would be a good starting point for how we think storage will be deployed on our system. Obviously, storage is a very complex issue. There's utility scale battery storage technology. There's pumped hydro. There's behind the meter storage and many other things in between, stuff that I frankly don't have the technical understanding of. And I think the other piece that's very important is establishing a cost benefit analysis. I think this process will give us a larger picture as to what storage is going to look like, and will help us down the track as we look through the resource planning process as these technologies become cost effective and are brought to the system. One other point, you know, this is fairly early technology here in the upper Midwest in the MISO footprint. There's a lot of work going on at MISO right now to establish sort of the market rules as to how this stuff is going to be deployed. We have technical folks that are working with MISO on a daily basis to try to you know, get the system right so that when this stuff does come online, it has the system in place so that it can be a true market force. So with that, I think I'll stop and be happy to ask questions.
Mr. Schaefer.
So I'm David Schaefer with the Minnesota Solar Energy Industries Association. We represent about 115 different solar companies throughout the state. I share pretty much everything that Peter said and that Representative Claflin said. Probably the one other point I'd like to emphasize is that as a solar association, we're aware that the sun doesn't always shine, but storage allows for solar companies and the utilities to deliver solar energy throughout the rest of the day and at times when the utility uses it and needs it the most. So there are periods where the utility's capacity, they have a very high peak, and they're able to shave that. That's something we've seen really recently with Conexus Energy, their cooperative utility. They just installed their own solar and storage system to help shave their peak, and that peak shaving trickles down to the ratepayers. So all in all, we're really excited about storage technology since it helps with the intermittency values and challenges and the ability to deliver solar when the utilities need it the most. So thank you, and we're happy to answer any questions.
We do have some questions, Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For testifiers or the author, are other states, other regions exploring battery storage? Is there a reason to do this out of the RDA if it's being done in Wisconsin or Ohio or California, that we just take their plan and plop it in place a year later and save $1 million or use it on something else?
I want us to take that.
Sure.
Thank you, Representative Mahoney. So there are other states studying the effects of storage right now. I believe a lot of our language that we've been working on with the utilities and with the author and the chair on came from other states. But it is important to study each individual state to see what the actual available storage capacity is for the grid. So each state's different. How much storage you can put on there and how helpful it is state specific. So the idea would be to study the impact in Minnesota and, for example, in Xcel's service territory, where the best places to put it are, how much you need in various spots, things like that.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Why are we paying for what Xcel Energy has to do? Seems simple to me. They need to be able to tell us where they need to put it. You know, where their capacity is. The same with any other investor-owned utility or even a muni or a co-op. That's part of their business model. And I don't know why we do a lot of business subsidy in this state. I mean, I know I'm sounding like I'm supposed to be on the other side of the table, but I get tired of subsidizing that which businesses have done for the last, well, since capitalism began. And they come to us and say, oh, I need $1 million. We just came from a committee hearing where they asked for multiple millions to train their employees. 20 years ago, they did all that. And now they want the state to pay for it. And here again, we're doing it again and again and again. So I'm not understanding why we have to pay, or Xcel, the renewable, whatever fund they're calling it now, has to pay for what an industry should be doing.
Thank you. I take that as a comment. Representative Swazinski, did you have a question? I'm sorry, Representative Baker.
Madam Chair, thank you. And thank you, Representative Claflin, for the bill. It's a clone bill of one that I was carrying earlier, and so when I picked up the then Representative Rarick's bill, and I think it was mentioned earlier from the testifiers that there had been a lot of conversation about this, and I think that those are those magical moments to me, members, that makes this place work really well, when there's a lot of conversation about when is the right time to let some things out of the box and when not to. And I think that House File 1165, when it first came out, was actually a pretty good bill. Now it's ruined, in my opinion. And I will tell you just why I think it's not right. A couple of sections were added very last minute, and I wanted to talk about that, I guess, with the author, to talk about the need for forcing now instead of allowing that conversation to take place about, you know, including storage as part of the power plan and having that, because I like the Kinexus plan. I think that what I'm seeing is really cool stuff. Part of my concern is really cool stuff, when it's not ready for launch, can be a real problem for our rate payers. Because what we learned with the Kinexus presentation, and maybe you saw the presentation and saw what we saw, but there was only, you know, some of my concerns were there was only 75 cycles in these batteries that you could use in a course of a year. It's going to get better. I mean, I like the project. I think it's good. But when they're allowed to do this in a natural process, being kind of forced along more quickly than what the technology is ready for, I get really worried about that. So Section 2 is a new section that I had not seen before, requiring public utilities to submit the application by a certain date. Now you're forcing them to get moving on this quicker than I think than a lot of the IOUs might think they're ready to deploy this in a competitive way. And when you make statements that it's going to lower the cost, I'm not sure they would agree with that, but maybe we'll hear from them. I'm not sure. But that's a section that makes me very, very nervous. And so I offer that question. And then also I want to turn to Section 8 when it identifies hospitals or a critical healthcare facilities. And again, when I visited with my hospital centers, they all pretty much have generation backup, and electricity is very important. But if they are also now kind of required to move in that direction, or the IOUs to focus on those things, I'm just not sure we're ready. So I guess my question is, do you know what this is going to do to the cost of these projects, having deadlines and changes from may to must? That's a big change in the bill. Again, I think storage is part of our future. I am not denying that at all. But when we work on these projects and we talk about this in collaborative manners, and then at the last minute you throw this in and you grab a big reach to say, oh, well, let's get this and this in here now, there goes a lot of our working that I feel personally as a member of the Energy Committee for the last 4.5 years. Our trust is not as good as it could be when this kind of stuff happens. So kind of to the author, I guess, I'm just asking, do you understand the need, and why did you want to put these sections on top of what I thought was a well-crafted coalition bill agreed on by a lot of partners? And if you could help me understand that, Representative, that would be great. Thank you.
Representative Baker, when you looked at Section 8, I heard you say that this was a mandatory, and I see that as a permissive grant program, so I would think we need to clarify that with House Counsel.
Madam Chair, you're correct. Section 8 is directing Commissioner of Commerce to develop a program to award grants for demonstration projects for these critical healthcare facilities, but they will have to come forward with the projects indicating that they're ready to do one.
This is a voluntary portion of the bill. Nobody has to do it. We have done lots of voluntary things here, and this is a voluntary.
But not Section 2. But thank you for the clarification. But Section 2 is not voluntary.
Representative Long, did you
want to
clarify that?
I thought I asked the author, I guess.
Oh, yeah. You want to ask the author.
Yeah, thank you.
Two. Okay. And if you would like to bring up other testifiers on that, I would ask Mr. Burns to come up.
Yes, thank you. We wouldn't be asking anyone to install a project that's not cost effective. And the technology has evolved as the conversation has moved forward. And to speak to it in a bit more detail, I have Mr. Burns, who will help with some of the details.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Representative Claflin. And before I answer your question, just want to thank I should identify myself, John Burns, with the Burns Knight Law Firm, and I represent Fresh Energy. I also represent the Energy Storage Association. And both organizations have been very active on this topic over the last couple years. And before I answer your question specifically, I just want to thank Chair Wagenius for bringing this topic forward and having a committee hearing earlier this session on this particular topic. and for helping educate your committee members about the strong benefits of energy storage for Minnesota and for the ratepayers. And also thank Representative Claflin for bringing this bill forward. And also, frankly, Representative Baker, thank you for picking up the mantle from Representative Rarick, who brought the bill forward last year, and Representative Bowe as well for being a co-author. Now, with respects, I do have to qualify my answer a little bit. Energy Storage Association is an association with a number of members, and the actual, it takes a while sometimes to send the language to the members to get their feedback, so we don't exactly have feedback specifically on Section 2 from them, so I can't speak definitively as to where they're at. But the whole goal here is to take, my understanding is to take the things we worked on very closely last year and to do more. And I would also say that this is a very iterative process, and there's folks in the room we've worked with on the IOU side, and we've made a lot of progress last year, and we believe energy storage is right for Minnesota. It's right for Minnesota now. This is technology we can deploy now, and utilities have already done that, and we've heard from Conexus about the great job they're doing, which makes their grid more resilient, which benefits their ratepayers, and also, frankly, benefits cost. And we can also talk about the benefits of integration of renewables, making renewables cheaper. So we're very excited about this. This is takes what was started last year and moves it forward. And frankly, there's a lot of, this is a real technical bill, and there's a lot of things that we all need to work on. And so we're certainly committed, Representative Baker, to continue working with you and others on the committee and the chair, and Vice Chair Long, to get a good, strong bill that moves energy forward, because I think that's what this committee wants to do.
Thank you for that. Representative Baker, one of the reasons we had a whole hearing on storage earlier is because things had moved so fast from last year to this year. In this technological age, things are moving a lot faster than we tend to move. So that's why we wanted to update every member of the committee on what was going on in storage, and I hope that's what we accomplished, particularly with the testimony from Conexus. I thought that was absolutely astonishing, actually.
And Madam Chair, it was, and I want to acknowledge that.
Okay. Let me finish. One of the things in the section you're talking about, I ask, let me have counsel again clarify when the applications for the storage are due, because I thought this was, we were still going years out here. And if council would help.
Madam Chair, line 2.27 of the bill indicates that the applications from the utility for proposals regarding storage are due by January 1st, 2021, 2 years from now.
So 2 years from now, there is going to be a, just given what's going on in storage, it's like this, 2 years from now, there are going to be so many more opportunities for our utilities. So,
and Madam Chair, I guess if I could just reply to that, I think I don't disagree with most of what you said. I think the technology is coming, but there's still a lot of uncertainty about that. I think we just want to acknowledge that let's get a part of the power plan. I think that's what the original bill was intending to do. Now you've got a date on here of 2 years. Now, what if we don't find ways of finding more cycles in a year? I mean, right now, for me, 75 cycles is not nearly enough. Doesn't mean we shouldn't do pilot projects. It doesn't mean we shouldn't keep expanding. The folks that did the presentation, I want to go see their site. I was excited about this, and I'm truly sincere when I say this is not a bad idea. But I think forcing a date out there, whether it was 1 year or 5 years, we still just don't know. Those are the parts of these bills that I sense, you know, again, being a former commissioner on a power utility with a muni, I just know how slow some of this technology does work. And I think that that's a bad section today. Now, it may not be in a year or two, but I don't know what it looks like in a year or two. So that section that was put in overnight makes me really nervous. And I think that's a mistake to make this bill that was worked on, as Mr. Burns had said too, it was worked on hard, and yet you took a bunch more. And I think that was a very aggressive step with Section 2. I just want to make sure that that was said publicly in this, because I think it took a good bill now and it made it just sort of not make it as good as it could have been, I think it's a mistake. And I hope that that section comes out, and I hope the author might consider that as this moves forward.
Representative Long.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Looking at Section 2 quickly, it seems fairly modest requirement to me. The utilities have 2 years to propose a project of any size that has to be cost effective. And so I think when we're looking at new technologies, the energy sector has always had the need to, when we're innovating and bringing new technologies online, have demonstration projects, prove concepts, and there's always been government support at that time, going back to natural gas, to nuclear, to everything we've done. There's been government support early on in the energy sector to move new technologies. We know that storage is extremely promising. We heard that testimony here in committee before. So this requirement seems extremely modest, as does, frankly, $1 million in helping with demonstration programs from the RDA. We heard testimony from Conexus about the work they're doing. Xcel had an extremely exciting solar and storage project that they're developing in Colorado with prices that have been lower than have been seen anywhere else. So I think having new ideas in bills is part of the process, and I appreciate Representative Claflin bringing this forward.
Thank you. Representative Baker, and for members, I would just like to point out lines 4.3 to, that section, subdivision 4. That says the commission shall review each of these proposals and may approve, reject, or modify. And look at the criteria for the commission is it determines whether the proposal is in the public interest and reasonably balances the value derived from the deployment of the energy for ratepayers in the public utility operations. So this is our normal process. And I certainly have confidence in our PUC to protect our ratepayers and our utilities while going forward with innovation. I expect you remember, as I do, the testimony that we had that Xcel had wanted to do some innovation in storage, and our PUC would not let them do it. And so they went to Colorado, where they did the very kind of innovation we want our utilities to do. And I hope that we will have a bill later on that will say, PUC, let utilities be a little more creative. We do not want to have to go back and fix like we are doing today. So that's why you see this, and that's why I wanted to draw your attention to this very specific language.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And again, I do recall that conversation. I think the point of this was that I think the importance of the work that folks outside of this committee were working on, and this committee just sort of ignored that agreement and put some things in here that I don't think that collaboration and that effort tried to get to. This was, I think, a misuse of our committee authority, and I don't think that we should have done that as a committee. So that's what I'm trying to bring up here is the work that we all try to do on both sides of the aisles, whether you're with the utility side or with clean energy side, it doesn't matter. We all want to get a carbon-free environment. What makes me really nervous is when you start saying dates and mandates, and that's what makes us scared when I want to work on these kind of issues, because that's what you don't know is the future. We don't know what that's going to look like. So it's law. It's now got to be by 2021 if this goes through, and that makes me nervous. So I just think we showed a lot of disrespect to that group of working folks on this bill, and now the bill is not at all what it was. So thank you.
Well, I would just remind you that that bill was a year old, and so much has happened, and that's why we had hearings earlier to talk about everything that has happened within this last year. Representative Long.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to point out on the bill last year, it sounds like there was a lot of excellent work done, and I think that's really important, and storage, I think, is a topic where there's a lot of agreement and that we need to move forward, which I think is exciting. There are four members on the committee who weren't even here last year. The bill author wasn't in the legislature last year. I think it's fair for new ideas to come forward as part of the process, and we can discuss new ideas and whether they are meritorious or not. But I think the fact that there are new ideas being proposed in storage, I don't think is meant to be disrespectful to the process that had been gone before.
And Madam Chair, because that was directed toward me, I guess I just want to say it isn't that the new members here make a difference in that collaboration. We weren't part of that discussion last year. It was the group of folks behind the scenes that are still all the same players, and they brought us a bill this year that was the same bill that was done last year. So it wasn't like they brought us a new bill either. So anyway, I want to make sure it's clear that this isn't something we heard about a lot last year because it was being worked on. It had gotten worked on. It was brought forward this year by Representative Rarick, and now it's changed. So that's what's different.
Representative Swasinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just kind of going a little bit along the same lines. You mentioned kind of the growth curve is kind of the exponential growth in storage and the technology. I mean, where do you see it in 5 years?
I am an optimist. I see an immense change. I see immense change for the good.
I think that's a good point. You know, I think in 5 years, the changes you may see from what we're seeing today, this bill has been on the books for a year and a half of negotiations between the parties, you know, outside and inside this room. This amendment came, I don't know, a couple days ago. My guess is it's been worked on for, I don't know, I'm not sure who wrote it or where it came from. It sounds like, I'm guessing the parties involved, maybe behind, I mean, maybe the other folks, I mean, was this part of a negotiation that went on behind the scenes? I don't know. But, you know, this could have been a separate bill by itself, you know, instead of just simply cloning a bill that, you know, I think it's 1,000 points different. I think it was 165, and this is 1,065. This could have been just a simple bill. This introduction could have been here. And we could have just simply moved 165, which did have, you know, a coalition built around it. I mean, I think to the freshmen in this room, I think that's an important thing to do. You know, when something has bipartisan support, bills that you sign on to, that's a great opportunity to look at the work that's been done before and to say, was that bad work? No. Is it the best work that we could do? Well, maybe not, but it still had a coalition built around it. And I think when you sign on to bills, as myself and others and Dave, and I think, you know, the bills moving forward in this particular fashion, unamended, in the other body, we won't mention their name, but, you know, we could get this done. I mentioned it just a couple weeks ago, you know, when we had the opportunity to hear the presenters from the U of M, which they did a fine job. But we could have gotten some early work done. We could have sent some bills to the governor that would have made a difference in the state. Instead, this is going to get buried in an omnibus bill that potentially won't see the light of day. You know, if this bill would simply move forward, we could move, Bill 165 forward, pass it through, send it to the governor's desk, and it could come law. It could make a difference. It could really open the eyes. It could open opportunity in a passive way by not being a mandate, by not, you know, imposing costs. I would argue in the energy area, when you mandate something, you're going to force it to be more expensive because I don't believe there will be a cost. You know, there are other issues with the PUC, you know, this resource plan and that. I do have an amendment that could potentially help this that may garner some extra votes if you're looking for some extra votes on this particular bill. But, as we're moving forward in the legislature, we're in the minority. We don't have the votes to make the difference. But I think, you know, voices do matter. And I think this administration ran on a mission of one Minnesota. When you see bills like this move forward, where you actually had one idea that moved forward as support from utilities and generators and potential storage people, you know, I think that was a good thing. And when you have something like this that shows up at the last minute, this would have been a great idea for a bill, not necessarily for amendment. And so that's my non-question.
Thank you. Representative Mahoney, do you have a question or a non-question?
How about a rant? I mean,
there's a third option.
That's Representative Mahoney.
To my colleagues across the aisle, if we had to be 100% sure that what we passed at this legislature was going to be 100% successful, we probably shouldn't come here at all, period. Every bill that come, 90% of the bills that come through every committee, we have a reasonable expectation of success, but not 100% expectation of success. And, you know, we put money into medical research, into job research, into business research with the hope that it's successful. And we do the best planning that we can. And it doesn't matter whether it's this committee or any other committee. So to say that unless we have 100% certainty or we go 100% with the community of support for it, it borders on, well, borders on not getting anything done. I had to change my, I had to be more tactful there. So just to that particular piece. But Representative Long spoke earlier about the energy world always getting support from government. And it does. It always has. But it didn't get support. It got support from taxpayers, not ratepayers. This is money out of the RDA, which comes from Xcel Energy ratepayers alone for nuclear class storage at Prairie Island. And for those new members to the committee, the last 4 years I've served on the Energy Committee, I'm being consistent. I am tired of Xcel ratepayers paying for every piece of research in the energy world or whatever up in, you know, the Northwest or the Southeast. Why are we taking it out of the RDA when something like this should be taken out of taxpayers' money? It's the taxpayers taking risks. Whether we put storage at a hospital or a state capitol building, I'm fine with checking that out. But I'm a little tired. No, I'm very, very tired of the RDA being used as the piggy bank for the state. My ratepayers, my constituents in my district are not wealthy. They should not have to pay for other people's usage. And that's what irritates me about this. This is geared, if you want to do this, do it in Xcel Energy ratepayers area. Don't put it up in Baudette or Fairmont or Moorhead or wherever. Because they're not ratepayers. They're not paying into that fund. Taxpayers should pay for this, not the RDA. There's my rant. And I am being consistent for those who have been on the committee before, you understand, for the new members. I really, really hate the idea of the RDA being used as that piggy bank.
Thank you. Representative Bow, and then I sense there is not an amendment coming, but if somebody wants to put a fourth amendment, let me know. And then we are going to hear from the public.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Two quick thoughts and then a question. Thought one is I've had privilege of serving on the Board of Directors for a local power agency that represented 12 community members. And as such, I really don't like mandates because of the likelihood of causing costs for those services, technologies, et cetera, to go up because they know they've got a captured audience and they're going to have to pay. So mandates I don't like, and inclusion of this date of January 1, 2021 is a mandate to me, and that means prices will likely go up. Thought number two is, as an environmental professional, I like the thought of storage, and I know we need to advance the technology there. You have to have storage to be able to bridge the gap between the ebb and the flow of solar energy, wind energy, things like that. So I applaud this effort, and I think we're going in the right direction as far as encouraging more storage development. But under line 2.27, where it says each public utility and generation and transmission cooperative, et cetera, I'm curious, which utilities, which cooperatives will this apply to?
Let me ask, council is asking me something and I'm not sure what it is. Go ahead. This was an amendment that should have, this. You're talking about 2.6 to 2.10?
Well, subpart 2, yeah. Yep, subsection 2, 2.27. Yep, that's the one. Okay, 2.27 to 2.30, the bottom of page 2.
2 points. Okay. I understand there was a drafting error here. And we will take this part out later on where there isn't an amendment, so I'm not going to. Well, just. Okay, we could do an oral amendment if everyone agrees to it. Right.
Madam Chair, if I understand Representative Bowe's comment on line 2.28, delete everything before the word providing. So the words we're deleting are and generation and transmission cooperative electric association. That would make subdivision 2 apply only to public utilities.
So would it apply to municipal utilities and privately owned and all
Chair,
utilities?
Representative Bowe, no, just public utilities as defined in 216B.
So the, and I will propose this amendment, and if it's agreed to by everybody, we will take it out that we, on lines 2.28, take out the words and generation and transmission cooperative electric association. If everybody, if we can get some consensus here, I would make that motion. I think I see some consensus. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposition? That language is removed. All right, let's go back now. Representative Swierczynski, did you have an amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair. I would like to offer the A1 amendment to 1165. I think that would have probably helped if we could have adopted mine first. We wouldn't have had to do the cleanup work. And that simply just would get rid of that section in that area. And that removes a mandate in the bill that utilities must propose energy storage projects. And so I think that would help clean up the bill and probably actually get it a little bit closer to the original intent of the bill, which I think would probably put a lot of people in this room at ease around both sides of the table. If we're looking to build consensus, I think it brings a common sense approach potentially ahead in this particular area. As the chair said, we're in an exponential growth curve when it comes to this technology. And, this mandate, if it is a mandate, simply latches on at a certain point where there could be a potential growth way above. And, simply allowing some of that technology to grow to propose things out in the future, I think is a wise decision in allowing the time because each utility is a little different and let them to potentially deploy it and include this in part of their portfolio as a time that they may seem more appropriate. I would ask for a roll call. Thank you.
We'll ask for a roll call. And the chair will ask members to vote no. Much has happened in the last year. And we are moving forward. We're not stagnant. Representative Stevenson, would you like to speak on this part?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to speak on the amendment. I also oppose the amendment, and I appreciate the great work that has been done in the past by Representative Baker and then Representative Rarick and all of the stakeholders working together to try and find some consensus. That's great and important work. I think, though, that it's not just our job here to ratify agreements that are made between private entities. Sometimes it's our job to lead, and sometimes it's our job to set direction and move the ball forward. And I think this is one of those times. I think we all agree in the room that storage is going to be a critical part of how we arrive at a solution to this climate crisis. And it isn't just enough to be satisfied with what the interest groups that are involved here are comfortable with. Sometimes we are going to have to push and lead here. And I think that what Representative Claflin is proposing here is an important way that we can drive the ball forward on just an absolutely critical issue. And so I understand where the other side's coming from on this, but I just think that this is a really important opportunity for us to push the ball forward and show some real leadership.
I see no further questions or comments. The clerk will take the roll, and the chair votes no.
Representative Swazinski?
Aye.
Representative Acomb?
No.
Representative Baker?
Aye.
Representative Bierman?
No.
Representative Bowe?
Aye.
Representative Christensen?
No.
Representative Garofalo? Representative Helverson?
No.
Representative Hornstein? Representative Long?
No.
Representative Mahoney? Representative Meckland? Representative Stevenson?
No.
The vote is 7-4. The amendment is not adopted. Is there public testimony on this bill? Mr. Evans from Xcel Energy.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Rick Evans with Xcel Energy. Thank you all for the opportunity to testify in this bill, and I do want to thank Representative Claflin for bringing the bill forward. Have some remarks that are on different parts of the bill. But let me start by just reiterating that when our CEO announced a few months ago that the goal of the company would be to get to 100% carbon-free energy by 2050, that was a directive that went through the company. It is now the focus of the company, including our resource planners, including myself, including all of the electrical engineers, electricians, and workers that work for the company. And we have certainly not been oblivious to the fact that storage is very likely to play a significant role in reaching that goal. As I think we've discussed before, we don't know how to get to 100% carbon-free by 2050, but we believe that if we establish that as our goal, we will be able to move toward it. There is no question that storage will be a part of that. And that is why for more than a decade we have conducted studies of storage on our system, both here in Minnesota as well as in Colorado. We have followed the research. There is hundreds of billions, I suspect, at least billions of dollars worth of research going on across the country in terms of how to develop storage, how to use storage on the energy system. MISO, the service organization that we all belong to that runs the transmission grid, is spending tremendous resources studying storage, how it impacts the system, how it's going to be used. We are very well prepared, very well set up to use storage to reach our goal of 100% carbon free by 2050. Sections 1, 3, 5, 9, and 10 of this bill, we think, are terrific sections of the bill. They move the ball forward. They help us to continue to do the work that we've already been doing for more than a decade. We appreciate Representative Claflin for bringing those parts forward, because those are going to be the tools that our engineers and our experts will be able to use as we continue to develop this this technology. Sections 2, 4, 6, 7, and 8 are new to us. We saw them last night. We have experts in our company, electricians, electrical engineers, resource planners, computer modelers, who we will bring to bear on this. We're happy to see that the bill is going to be laid over. We look forward to working with Representative Claflin and any of you that are interested to see if we can make sure that those that any additional sections to the bill that have now been added do not provide an impediment, do not duplicate expenditures that are already being made in other places, don't, you know, spend money needlessly to follow this technology, which is already, as I say, being followed very closely. So we look forward to working with the committee and working with Representative Claflin on those, particularly those sections of the bill that are new to us, and bringing the expertise that the company can bear on those issues. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
I don't see any questions. The next testifier.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Lauren Lontag with Otter Tail Power in Fergus Falls. And I won't reiterate much of what Mr. Evans said, but there are sections of the bill which are very familiar to us and which we spent a lot of time working with the thermal storage folks to negotiate last year at this time. I'll just add that Otter Tail Power already has a thermal storage project going on, and what we don't have is authority to cost recover any of that, as it's provided for early in this bill. We're using thermal storage. The bill provides for that, so we appreciate the continuation of that concept. We use water heaters and thermal storage all over our system, which covers 40,000 square miles, and we're working with a firm called Odie that has a fairly large facility down 494 and 35W. You can see it on the horizon down there. And we're working to send out, to communicate in microseconds with thermal storage systems that are owned by customers all over our electric system on a microsecond basis so that we can maintain a smooth load. And the section of the bill called the Ancillary Services Cost Report, Section 6 of the bill is new. For your information, for those who are new, ancillary services are what we either provide ourselves or we purchase from MISO so that lights don't flicker and lights don't dim or go extra bright. We provide some of that ourselves, but more than 90% of that we purchase from MISO on a daily, hourly basis. So the answer to the study that's asked for in Section 6 is probably already known. We buy almost all of our ancillary services from MISO, and that will be what's in the report that's due October 1st of this year, according to line 7.11. Section 7 of the bill is new. We're just inserting new language for thermal storage into the CON statute. The CON statute, anytime we want to build a large facility in the state of Minnesota, we have to prove that it was the right decision, and so now we will include thermal storage in such decisions. The implication of the bill is by inserting more language that includes thermal storage, there's a suggestion that we, as utilities, haven't thought about this yet. The answer is we do think about that. When we do an integrated resource plan, we include every technology that has a remote possibility of providing better service at a lower cost for our customers. We model, we do hundreds of modeling runs, we do that for stakeholders. We meet with folks and say, what would you like us to consider? We do all of those things. We will include thermal storage in our next integrated resource plan. So the additions of thermal storage, I suppose those are belts and suspenders for some folks, but they will be studied by all the utilities no matter. Like Mr. Evans, I'll add that we look forward to working with the stakeholders on the bill, and we'll keep working to make this a better bill. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think after hearing some of the testifiers now, too, I maybe have a question for the author. And that was, when you decided to change the original bill to expand it, did you have the opportunity to visit with these folks here to talk about what your changes were ahead of time? It sounds like they just heard about this last minute too. So sort of your perspective of the changes that you wanted to make, and how did you bring in the other coalition that had been working on this?
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Baker. I have not yet had an opportunity to sit down with the utilities, and we greatly appreciate ongoing conversations, how we can improve this, what parts are already being done by the utilities, where we can help push the utilities forward, because we also need to keep moving ourselves.
Thank you. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry, one more question. I'm just before putting this forward then, who did you talk to about this? If the utilities were not consulted, were there other groups that you consulted on this?
I consulted with a number of folks within my own caucus and advisors from the energy field, renewable energy as well.
Thank you.
Thank you. I don't see any more questions, and I don't see any more discussion. I'll renew my motion that House File.
Madam Chair, sorry,
I didn't see another person coming.
I sneaked in. I'm sorry.
We have 3 minutes left. You can have
very
two.
Very briefly. Thank you, ma'am. Madam Chair. My name is Bill Black. I'm with the Minnesota Municipal Utilities Association. We've followed this bill in the previous session and up to today. The portion about the ancillary services report would apply to all utilities, not just the ones who were currently affected by the bill previously. So I just wanted to get on the record that we'd have concerns about establishing a new mandate for reporting ancillary services on the municipal utilities. Typically, they have about 1,250 customers. That's customers, not staff. And so you can imagine the level of staffing that they have in order to comply with the current reporting requirements for other state-mandated reports. So I just wanted to let the chair and the committee and the author know that we're willing to work on this if or have it removed if possible. Thank you.
Representative Swisinski, did you have a question?
Yes, just very quickly. Just, you know, I understand this bill is going to be laid over for possible inclusion, but just with the amendment in Section 8, you know, it kind of deals with the healthcare facilities and the demonstration projects there. You know, I would think the argument could be made that maybe this should potentially make a stop at HHS or the policy committee potentially, because they would be involved potentially in the energy from a healthcare perspective on this bill. And just maybe research could maybe speak to that, or Madam Chair, but I think that might be a decent stop to make before.
I will talk to the committee chair. Okay. See no further discussion, and I'll renew my motion that House File 1168 be 65. I'm sorry, be laid over for possible inclusion. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposition?
Aye.
Is laid over. Thank you for coming. We appreciate your carrying this bill.
Thank you.
Good journey.